Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everyone, welcome to another episode of The Warm Down today, joined by Ollie Kay. Should have got you a match ball, actually, because I think your third appearance, isn't it?
It is
your hat trick. Could have been here for a hat trick. Ollie's just moved over to The Athletic in a pure coincidence, because he actually didn't even know that this was sponsored by The Athletic, but this is sponsored by the good folks at The Athletic, and if you would like to get yourself a free trial and 50% off your yearly subscription, then the link is in the description below, or you can just go to theathletic.com/Howson and get all of that good stuff there. That's theathletic.com/Howson, 50% off your yearly membership and a month's free trial. It is the new home of football writing, as Ollie can attest to. Signed up everybody, haven't they, basically?
A few still to go, but it's started, launched in the UK in August, early August, having been going in the States for 3 years. And look, I've not come on here to be a salesman, but it is really, really good. The content, I mean, I know a lot of readers and a lot of football fans will say, oh, I don't have time for reading papers. It's all this, it's all that, it's all clickbait, it's all gossip, you know, headlines, sensationalism. I've always found that really unfair, because I think newspaper journalists, and I've been one for half of my life, do a really good job in very difficult circumstances. But having gone to The Athletic, you're working in a completely different way. You've got more time, you've got more space, you're not forced to hype something up in order to fit a certain profile on the back page.
Isn't that nice? Got high level of good analysis, good opinions. And obviously I read it for the football, it's easy to dip into other club stuff as well and see. And one I was going to bring it up later on in this chat, actually, but I saw you retweet it earlier talking about Henrik Larsson and that looking at buying Wickham, which I think is really interesting. And that's the sort of articles I really like. They're just genuinely interesting stuff. But The Athletic also, I mean, I didn't actually intend this for be like 2 minute advert here for The Athletic.
We're not going to stop at 2 minutes.
This is conversation.
If a long haul now.
But what they've done with football, they also did probably about a year, 18 months ago with Mixed Martial Arts, which I'm a big fan of as well. And they did the same thing. They cherry picked a lot of the writers that I already liked. And I was like, get in, this is going to be good. Yeah. And, you know, let's see where they go next. And it's very interesting.
But they've got, you know, their idea is that you have a specialist on each club. So we've got Laurie Whitwell as a Manchester United full-time, and then people like me and Adam Crafton and Andy Mitten also writing on Manchester United, and Danny Taylor when he starts next week. And so there's a sort of volume of knowledge, I'm not going to say expertise, but knowledge of that club. You know, I don't know how many matches all of us would have covered, Man United matches or other teams' matches between us, but it's a lot of knowledge, it's a lot of insight, people we know at the club, people we speak to at the club, and that's just United. But we've got correspondents, and very well connected correspondents, at every Premier League club, 7 or 8 Championship clubs, and it's just going to grow and grow. And it's try to persuade everybody that whoever your team is, if you're one of those sort of 30 odd teams, it will be the best coverage you get, better than that.
Joe, I haven't looked into, actually, and this has literally just popped into my head now as we're sitting here talking. It's non-league day this weekend. Is there anyone covering non-league on
there? There is. There isn't a dedicated non-league person, but there are certainly some plans to cover certain stories on with non-league day. And I think, and we've got, you know, I think one of the things is because we've got such a massive staff and resources in terms of that, you know, when an interesting story pops up outside of those 30 clubs, you know, we can send we can send somebody to Wickham to cover that, or Notts County, or wherever. It's, you know, there have been a lot of stories outside of the Premier League bubble, whereas even at the Times, which is a great paper, I'm very proud to have worked for the Times, but we're always quite restricted in terms of what we could do beyond, even beyond like the top six clubs. So when somebody is, when a club is very much in the news, say Watford are struggling, or say Watford are on the up, you'd get a feature on that team. Let's get an interview with a Watford player. Let's do it, something in depth on what, where it's all gone right, stroke wrong at Watford or Bournemouth or Southampton or wherever. But now we've got dedicated correspondents giving their fans the best coverage every day. And I feel like all I need to do now is give people the link in order to finish my sales pitch. But if I sound like a salesman, it's because I do actually really believe in what it is, and it's the content is really good. I know it's not going to be for everybody, but I don't think we've had many dissatisfied customers so far.
No, my only thing is I don't like the sensational stuff, as obviously I prefer the longer form conversation over the edited interviews and stuff like that, and I get that in written form from The Athletic. So when they contacted us and said, you know, we're interested in sponsoring some stuff, I was, I get a lot of sponsorships. I go, I'm not doing that. But The Athletic, I was like, oh yeah, cool, absolutely. I hadn't actually read it at the time, but as soon as I got the thing, I was like, yeah, let's check it out. And I did, and I was like, okay, sweet.
Yeah.
Happy days. Right, so I'm supposed to mention an article that someone's written at some point during our podcast as a bit of a jump-off point. But you've actually written one. I think it was yesterday, actually, you wrote it, wasn't it?
It was yesterday I wrote it. It's today it's been published.
Yep, which will have been 2 days ago by the time this goes out. But giving Solskjaer time, there's also Silva mentioned in there as well, but only if it's the right man. Can you expand on that for everybody a little bit?
Yeah, it's. I think everybody, and not fans of rival clubs, but I think there is in the media and within the football industry, and most obviously of all amongst United fans, is this real desire to see it work with Solskjaer. And I think from the media's point of view, it was a lovely story when he went there and he arrived in December, and he immediately made everybody feel good about themselves, breezed in, put smiles on faces, sounded like a Manchester United manager, which I don't think Mourinho ever did, Van Gaal ever did, Moyes ever did. In terms of sending out the right messages, I think he's been spot on from day one. The job he did in those first 2.5 months as caretaker manager was brilliant. But when Paul Ince turned around and said, well, he went too far, because he said something like, well, anybody could have done that. Me, Steve Bruce, Mark Hughes, whoever, anyone with an understanding of United could have done that, and the real tests will come, and they shouldn't rush into appointing him. That was basically Ince's position. It was also my position at the time that they shouldn't rush his appointment. I would give Solskjaer a lot more credit for those first couple of months than Ince seemed willing to, but I thought they really did need to take a deep breath before they jumped in and signed him up on a long-term contract and decided this is the way forward. And I do think they were too hasty. I do think there was some truth in what Paul Ince said. I do, as a journalist and as a football fan, I want to see him get it right, because I think it'd be a great story in terms of somebody from that Ferguson era coming in and putting everything right. I think it's a very appealing narrative and a very appealing storyline. And apart from that, I think everybody who's had any dealings with Solskjaer over the past 23 years or so since he came to England.
Jesus, it's been that long.
Yeah.
I feel a bit old now.
Everybody likes the guy. Everybody wants him to succeed. But there is this part of me, and it's a growing part of me, that just thinks, well, it's all very well saying, look, give him time, give him 3 or 4 transfer windows, give him the money that Mourinho had to spend, give him the money that Van Gaal had to spend. And I'm one who's always saying managers need time. But I didn't really think that was the right appointment to make. I didn't think Mourinho was the right appointment to make. I didn't think Van Gaal was the right appointment to make. So constantly saying these things need time is a bit dangerous, because if you look at the evidence, I mean, since that initial new broom effect wore off, results have been terrible. I mean, not just sort of tailed off, but they've actually gone beyond what they were under Mourinho, which was nothing like good enough. And he will say, Solskjaer will say, well, you know, it's not about the results, it's about the performances. If you go back to look at the games that they won since March, go back to the,
you know, that, look at many.
Well, I know, it won't take long.
But that
game against Watford, a few days after he got the job, Solskjaer said at the time, well, you know, that performance was not good enough, we got lucky. West Ham was the same. Chelsea was a very strange case, 4-0, because they were the second best for an hour, and then Chelsea crumbled and United had picked them off brilliantly in the final half hour. And then I can't remember what was the other. It was Leicester, which was a good, disciplined, dogged performance, but it wasn't a performance that told you this team is really kicking on.
There hasn't been a breathtaking performance.
There's not even,
since pre Paris.
There's not even been how many good performances have there been? As in,
yeah, not many.
No,
there hasn't been many. I mean, there's been some abject ones. Mm. Everton sticks out as like, I can't even begin to put into words how bad that performance was. And Newcastle was kind of up there. I think comparing him to previous managers post Fergie is unfair, because I think all of us would agree, certainly that 11 that we put out against Newcastle
was
probably one of the worst 11s I've seen a United team field. And people are like, look at what Fergie beat Arsenal with, but that team still had Evra and Rio and Rooney
Winners.
And stuff. Yeah, like character.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's no coincidence that this is our worst start for 30 years. Now, he was in charge 30 years ago. It was Sir Alex. And if you put modern values over what Sir Alex achieved or didn't achieve in those first 5 or 6 years, took over a team that had floundered and Ron Atkinson hadn't believed in himself after coming third, fourth, and playing breathtaking football, getting to cup finals, some serious fan favourites with Whiteside and McGrath, and Fergie comes in, is like, laters, get out. And he comes, I think second, after his first full season.
Yeah, he did.
So people are going to go, there's progress. Mm-hmm. Undeniable progress. There you go, he's got it. Then he comes 11th. Now, any manager that comes second and 11th right now doesn't survive.
No, it's true.
They certainly don't survive if they follow that up by coming 13th the next season. And then Fergie started to get a grip in some of the cups. I spoke to Martin Edwards, who said it was never on the cards to sell him because they was happy with the progress behind the scenes. I have to take him at face value with that. And then Manchester United obviously started to win things. But it took the greatest manager of all time 6 or 7 years to put that winning thing in place. Mm-hmm. And he did it by improving the players on the pitch. Mm-hmm. When I look at Andreas Pereira, and I look at even Marcus Rashford at the age of 21, and I look at other players in this team, Scott McTominay, people that you go, you're not quite ready to be the man for Manchester United. I look at a couple of players like Wan-Bissaka and Maguire and I go, good signings.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Need 5 more of them, arguably. And when I look at what Jose Mourinho with his CV did, I look at what Louis van Gaal with his CV did, and then I look at this 11, I thought at the start of the season we probably had 9 of an 11. And I don't know what we're going to do with the other 2. Maybe even another 3. Some people said 5 more were needed. When I looked at that 11, I was like, we're thin. And if we get an injury, we're knackered. And then you take out a thin squad, and you take out Luke Shaw, who, you know, people have got question marks over, which I think is valid. You take out Wan-Bissaka, we're definitely worse without him. You take out Paul Pogba, and that's an average midfield. And you take out Tony Marshall, who might be, well, he is our best finisher. And you go, right then, who wins matches for Manchester United? Where's, you know, even when you take it back to 30 years ago, Sir Alex had Mark Hughes, and he had Brian Robson, which was a... Those two alone, you had character. You had Gary Pallister, who was the equivalent of a Harry Maguire signing, stupidly expensive centre-half. Jury was a little bit out. People was like, he's probably going to make it. But initially, wasn't settling. and you look how long, because people go, oh, but the money he spent. Fergie spent a lot of money relative to the time in 89. Yeah. Like, I remember, I think it was a record signing for a defender in Pallister. We broke the British transfer record pretty soon after for, I can't remember who it was. Keane was a British transfer record, but he'd already won a league.
Ince was expensive, Danny Wallace was expensive.
Ince was a couple of mil, wasn't it? I think
Neil Webb was expensive.
If it takes the greatest manager I've ever seen in my lifetime that long, I don't know if Ollie is the guy. I don't think you find out in 9 months with this team.
No, but isn't the problem here? Look, you don't find out within 9 months, but you also didn't find out within 2.5 months, which is when a lot of the decisions were made of right, look, this is the guy. You know,
decision was correct at the time because there was 10 players on contracts ending. There was summer transfer targets needed aligning, and I know Wan-Bissaka got wrapped up in March. Effectively wrapped up in March.
But do you think Wan-Bissaka would have not come if he'd not known that Solskjaer was manager, or not come? I mean, I remember hearing an argument at the time about we need certainty because we've got contracts expiring. We've got Juan Mata, David De Gea contracts to do. I mean, De Gea wasn't done till a few weeks ago, and it didn't look like it was a contract that was
I'd heard something on that though that. He had a contractual loyalty bonus on the 1st of September and he was always going to sign after that, even if it was decided prior to that.
But it looked like a contract that wasn't necessarily signed on the basis that I'm convinced this club is going in the right direction. It looked like a contract that he signed thinking, I'm settled here. Things aren't great on the pitch, but I'm settled here. Hopefully we'll get back into the Champions League, which is, absolutely is right. But I don't think you struggle as Manchester United to make new signings or tie up contracts on the basis of we're not quite sure who the manager's going to be yet. I think.
But is this a penny pinching exercise potentially then? We don't want to see De Gea leave for free. We don't want to see Pogba leave for free. We don't want to see Marshall leave for free. These all players have got value attached to them. They seem to like this Norwegian fella. Keep him for now.
Look, I mean, it's the issue with players' contracts and so on was we probably agree that isn't the reason to appoint somebody as manager. He was appointed because he'd done a really good job as a caretaker.
I think it's more of like there was 60-70% fulfilling a lot of the criteria, if not all of the criteria. And I think that there was like, we can plan with this guy. Yeah. Fans like him. The results on the pitch are great. The players like him. And they're willing to re-sign. Just do it.
And they were, the results were great for those few months.
Record breaking.
This will sound a bit revisionist, but I think the performance level probably peaked quite early on. But then there were some really good results in terms of Spurs away, Arsenal away, Chelsea away was really good. PSG away was slightly freakish.
Arsenal that we lost was a brilliant performance that we arguably deserved to lose.
Yeah. But the way it just sort of petered out after that.
It's inexplicable, isn't it?
Well, the explanation would be that the players just thought, all right, we can relax again. Now, if the players, having relaxed and, I hate that phrase, down tools, but you only have to look at the performances in late Mourinho time to say that those guys were not playing 100% at full pelt or were not looking like they were happy, committed footballers at that time. And then they had this 2 and 3 months of looking happy and committed and confident. And then as soon as the guy gets the job, they regress. And they've not really got back on it at all. And so that means, does that mean you respected the guy enough to start performing when he came in, but then you don't respect him enough to keep doing it when he's off? There are a lot of questions to be asked about every single aspect of Manchester United at the moment. I mean, not least, whenever I've been on here before, we've ended up talking more about the failings of the boardroom and the Glazers and Ed Woodward, and that is everything comes back to that. And I've wrote a piece along those lines for The Athletic a couple of weeks ago. Every problem at Manchester United comes back to the boardroom, which it does. But when I accuse Woodward and the Glazers of being reactive and being not really having a great vision. Part of me thinks that the Solskjaer appointment in March was, again, it wasn't suddenly having long-term vision. It was being reactive. It was saying in December, right, well, we're going to appoint Solskjaer as a caretaker, and now we're going to take the time to look at our structure and find the right person.
They didn't say this is an audition for the job, did they?
No, but I mean, there was always the possibility that if he impressed, then he could get the job full-time. I think that was quite apparent from quite an early stage, but they never, you know, they didn't appoint a director of football. They didn't, I mean, there's this sort of cast of people behind or underneath Woodward and sort of behind Solskjaer who are now as a sort of transfer committee, but you know, there's not, to me, it always sounds like it's still Woodward calling the shots on football, and it's Woodward deciding to appoint Solskjaer, and it's Woodward very much approving or not approving transfer targets and transfer strategy. So to go from that and thinking of appointing a director of football to then doing the classic football club thing of, right, well, we've got the right man here, the caretaker manager has proved to be the right man, we'll give him the job. And how often does that work? Long term, you so often see that sort of initial momentum replace and you know, they've
best example.
Performances go well.
Zinedine Zidane.
Well, no, I mean, Zidane did very well. Let's be honest, Zidane did very well. But I would still look at Zidane. Look, it's a completely different conversation. But I'd still look at Zidane and question just how good a manager he was, and whether he just happened to be the right manager for that group of players at that particular time in that particular tournament, the Champions League, which he did so well in, because he didn't change things in the way that he didn't do the kind of root and branch reform that was needed and is now needed again now that he's back at Real Madrid. And so, I mean, look, it reminded me a lot of Di Matteo getting the Chelsea job, and obviously winning the FA Cup, winning the Champions League that season. And still at that point, Abramovich didn't want to give him the job. Abramovich wanted Guardiola that summer, even after Di Matteo won those things. And you'd have to say that that was the right position to have. That was the intelligent, cold-hearted, pragmatic decision to have. It would have been, you know, it would have upset the fans because you're getting rid of a club legend who has just won the Champions League for you. It would have been almost impossible to do, but he wanted Guardiola, and if Guardiola had not been so desperate to have a sabbatical and so utterly terrified by everything he heard about Chelsea at the time, he might have got him.
It's probably valid.
Well, absolutely valid. And I think, you know, Guardiola, for all that he's done at City, would he have had the same success had he gone to Chelsea in 2012 or United in 2016 or whenever? Who's to say? But I think what we know about Guardiola is he is absolutely a top-class coach. And what we knew about Ferguson in the late 80s is he was a top-class manager. It didn't mean that he was guaranteed to prove it at United, because you just said the first 4 years he definitely didn't prove it. But Solskjaer is 300 and something games into his managerial career. I'm not convinced he's a top-class manager. I don't hear that his coaching is brilliant. I don't see massive improvement in individual players or in the collective or looking organised or looking at. I love everything he says about United, and I love the values that he has, but it might be that, you know, there has to be something in the back of every Man United fan's mind thinking, well, what if that was as good as it gets?
I'm not someone who ardently, blindly defends. I've always said, like, you'll never see me standing outside Old Trafford screaming sack him, because it's just not my style.
But unless it's outside the media entrance.
Yeah, different story, different sacking that I'm asking for. But yeah, you won't see me asking for a manager to be sacked, because I knew the time was up with Moyes, and fundamentally the time was up with Ollie, and ultimately the time was up with Jose.
Yeah.
But I always think these managers need time, and it's not just time. As your article said, that nothing just changes with time. There has to be work going on. There has to be planning. There have to be changes enacted that do take time to actually come to fruition, but they have to actually be making changes. We've been looking the last 2 days, really, doing a bit of research of what our starting 11 and tactics look like in those initial 12 weeks or so versus now, and what the difference is in terms of chance creation, chances conceded, everything, basically. So see if we can pinpoint what it was so different. On the face of it, people are going to laugh, but, I mean, the midfield was obviously different. It was Matic, Herrera, Pogba. Midfield three rather than the 4-2-3-1. Phil Jones was a massive part of that initial success.
Yeah, he played very well.
And that's where we're kind of up to at the minute in terms of what we're finding out. I want to dig down into it deeper and come up with it. Now, I think the forward three was Marshall, Rashford and Lingard responsible for it. And it wasn't necessarily in a 4-3-3. They also played the diamond quite effectively. And I do want to see if it's that. Lately, certainly against Newcastle, I was looking at, I was trying to put together an 11 and I was like, we have to change this. The 4-2-3-1's not working.
No, I agree.
And then coming away from Newcastle, there was times where, you know, I saw Maguire and Axel Tuanzebe dribbling past Fred and McTominay. What are we doing here? Like, you're offering nothing to the team by sitting this deep. We need options further up the pitch. This needs to be a midfield three. We've got the personnel to play a midfield three. It's not like we can't, like, oh, we just can't do it. We could even play a back three if we wanted. And that I do put at Ollie. Just, we've played one formation all season. Can we not just change one thing?
And it's not even a squad that is, I mean, to play 4-2-3-1, I mean, Mata was playing number 10 the other day. It was Lingard before that. I don't think either, you know, Mata...
It's not like one person's just owning this position.
Well,
you have to accommodate it.
I don't think it's a squad that was built with 4-2-3-1 in mind. I don't think many people would look at the names on the players United have and think, right, well, that's the way forward for that. 4-2-3-1. I find it strange when Mourinho was persisting with it. I find it strange now. But to get back to your point earlier, it's hard to pick an 11 at the moment if you only really rate nine of the players.
That's first and that's when
they're all fully fit. It's you are going to have weak links at the moment because it's been they went into the season with a squad full of weak links. And
I think that's fundamentally the issue. Yeah. We lost. You know, we was looking at Rashford and Martial, and they haven't performed. But we was looking at them going, hey, lad, we need a record-breaking season out of you. And Mason, like, put them sticker bricks down and come here and score some goals. We'd lost Sanchez, even though he hadn't worked. That was a guy that had scored 30 goals in a season before. Lukaku hadn't worked, but he had scored, 25 goals in a season before. We allow that to go. And even Fellaini could score you a goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not here anymore.
Or at least be a nuisance in the penalty box and lead to a goal.
Plan B. We're crossing. Like, we've got a Fellaini at the moment.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is... I don't think you can pin that on Ollie. I don't think you can pin nothing on him, but you can't pin everything on him.
No, absolutely not.
You know, I think that even if you had peaks of Matt Busby right now, he'd struggle with his team. Peaks for Alex Ferguson, didn't win titles... In the mid-2000s, and he had Rooney, Ronaldo, Rio Ferdinand, Roy Keane, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Ryan Giggs, Paul Scholes. Are you telling me he wins this with Scott McTominay and
Pereira? No, absolutely not. I do like McTominay. I know you've mentioned him a few times. To me, if you were looking at a United player of the last 12 months or so, I laughed when Mourinho pinpointed him as his player of the season.
Do you know where that trophy came from, by the way?
Go on.
It was in the MUT office, and it was a MUTV office. It was a vase. It wasn't a planned thing. He walked in and went, "I'm giving an award away. Go and get me one." And they was like, "Oh shit!"
but he's if you look at the whole squad at the moment, and look, I don't think the squad is good enough, anything like good enough for a club of Manchester United size and ambitions and history. But nearly every player in that squad has underperformed over the last 18 months. I would say McTominay is the one who I just look at and think, you know, I never see him below a 6 out of 10. Players I never see above a 6 out of 10. And McTominay he's got the personality and the attitude and the courage and the balls to demand the ball, to take risks, to throw himself into tackles. And it's, I'm not absolutely not saying he's the new Brian Robson or Roy Keane or even the new Nicky Butt, but he is one player I think that would be in my Manchester United team at the moment, because he's, because you know what you're going to get from him, whereas with a lot of other players you fear you're not going to get anything at all, and often that's right.
But I agree with that on Scott. I think that, yeah, he's reliable without being spectacular.
Definitely not spectacular.
I think there's areas to improve in his game. His passing between the lines definitely needs improving. His just ability on the ball in general, I think he takes probably a couple too many touches, but he is reliable. Mm. And ultimately, at the moment, that is about as good as well. I mean, he's probably going to, if you give him player of the year away now, he's in a running.
Yeah.
And that's just literally for being reliable. and that's not acceptable for Manchester United.
No, it definitely isn't. And if you look at, I mean, the younger players a bit, Dan James, he's surprised me by hitting the ground running, and I think that's really...
I think in the circumstances of his father passing away and moving to United, and it's really admirable.
And it might be that was sort of adrenaline and, you know, surge of confidence, whatever, and it might be that there's a lull, it might be that, you know, it might be that we're in the midst of a lull now, and that might be perfectly understandable because he's a guy who's still finding his feet in the Premier League. But if you look at, you know, it is the younger players that you would probably be more enthused by at the moment. And again, if the club has, you know, as a result of all those horrendous transfers that they've made previously, most of which are put at Ed Woodward's door, if they've decided, well, youth is the way forward, we're going, you know, back to United's traditions, that's great, but they need to be coached and managed in a way that's really going to improve those players day in, day out, as well as just sort of learning on the job on a Saturday or a, I was going to say Tuesday night, Thursday night in the Europa League. But you know, you need that coach, that manager to be one that improves players. And Solskjaer's background is with youth players at United, but is he going to improve Wan-Bissaka? Is he going to improve McTominay, Pereira, Rashford, etc.? And I've got a question mark about that, because I don't really see great improvement at the moment. They don't look like a brilliantly coached team.
No, they don't.
At the moment. And that would be, again, why, for all that I enjoy and agree with all the messages that Solskjaer sends out about the way forward, I do have this doubt about whether, as a coach or as a manager, he's the man to practice what he preaches.
Do you think there's another side to him? Because I don't think, and I agree with his tactic, if we like to call it that, Jose ruined the confidence of United last summer with what he said on the tour. The way he spoke about some of the youngsters, and he basically come out and said, these are shit, without using as many words. I think he said something about, he's tried to defend Sanchez and was like, well, he won't be playing with these players when the season starts, which was basically like, these kids are shit, do one. Solskjaer's the opposite of that. And I think because he's the opposite of that, because he would rather manage the personalities and try and put confidence into players, or appear to put confidence into players, rather than belittle them like Jose did, I think he gets this impression as a yes man. Are you hearing, because I'm not necessarily hearing anything in terms of how he is behind closed doors. Is he more aggressive? Is he more assertive? Because I know that he did see his ass with not getting all the transfer targets he wanted a little bit in the summer.
He's more ruthless than people would give him credit for. I mean, I think getting rid of Lukaku was quite impressively ruthless. I'm not saying it was necessarily... Sanchez was probably an easier decision to make, but Lukaku, that wasn't an easy decision to say, right, well, this guy is probably in some ways our most reliable goal scorer, but we'll sell him. I think that was certainly ruthless. You could say it was even naive.
The way Fellaini went was ruthless.
Yeah,
he was gone in about a week.
Yeah, but he's not just a pushover, and he's not, you know, he's not just as nicey as you see in press conferences, but I don't know whether he's the person, to the manager, to put the fear of God into the players, or drag them out of a lull, because they've been in a lull since, what, late March, early April? And so I don't know how you would say that, yeah, he's got this ruthless streak and it's going to work because ABC, because he's not showing at the moment that he can drag the players out of that. So although he's got, you know, I'm sure he's less positive behind closed doors about the players and about some of the recent performances. I mean, he's somebody who is sort of by nature a sort of arm around the shoulder type of guy, type of manager, type of coach. And I'm not saying that's the wrong thing at all, because I think Klopp is an arm around the shoulder.
I reckon he can be a maniac, me.
He absolutely can be. Absolutely can be. And Guardiola can be a maniac in a different way and can completely lose it with his players. But whether he's got the sort of iron fist, whether Solskjaer's got the sort of iron fist quality that those two have, and that Fergie most definitely had, look, it's a different game these days, different industry, different generation players. You can't, you know, in the same way that teachers and parents can't talk to kids the way...
Oh, you can. Well, just do it. Shut
up. But you don't necessarily get their lifelong affection if you do it. You know, so it is different. You can't say, well, I mean, this whole thing of, oh, can you give them the hairdryer treatment? It's as if the hairdryer treatment is the solution to everything. It's not, because you know, Fergie learned to temper that in his later years and didn't do anything like as much. It would be a last resort option.
It actually seemed like the hairdryer thing was in the 80s when we were shit, mostly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think when the Neville gigs... Scholes generation were coming through. They said they got it a lot. And when Rooney would say, reference the hairdryer, people like Gary Neville would say, "You think that was the hairdryer? Jeez."
I thought they got it more off Eric Harrison than Fergie.
Yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, Eric Harrison was certainly one for that. And it was, but you know, we used to see as journalists, we used to see the Fergie hairdryer a lot in press conferences, and then we turned to Bill Thornton, who was the sort of veteran of the Daily's newspaper pack, and say, "God, that was a bad one, wasn't it?" And he'd go, "No, that was not even on the scale compared to what he's like in the early 90s." But anyway, off topic a bit, but it's Solskjaer does need to be ruthless. He does need to be able to drag players, because I think these players have shown they need to be dragged
verbally. Not even in the dressing room, but just drop someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Just go, "No, that wasn't good enough. Take a seat. Well, Brandon Williams, come on down."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, he's made some sort of symbolic statement selections and, you know, that kind of thing, and that I've liked. But it is almost like it's the symbolic statement type things that I liked about Solskjaer as United manager. So I don't think it's about making these grand statements that look good and look like you're sending out a message. I think you need to
just be better.
You want to turn up at Old Trafford and think, "Wow, God, that this lot look like they're really on it today. They look like you can tell what they're working on in training. You can tell what they want to be as a team." I don't think
that happened.
The game against Chelsea, the opening weekend of the season, was really interesting, because you could tell their counter-attacking was brilliant in that game. Their defending was pretty decent, although I think, you know, Chelsea deserved to score one or two.
We haven't conceded many goals.
No.
It's the lack of scoring that's done.
But it's the lack of real control and creativity and fluency and spark and penetration, whatever, in the performances. And you know, I saw a thing yesterday about the expected goals and saying, look, you know, if they'd converted this chance, they'd be third or one point behind Liverpool or something like that. But the difference between United and Liverpool in terms of the just maturity, yeah, control...
We might have been up there, but we're not up there, are we?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think that, you know, the McTominay header from sort of practically under the crossbar against Arsenal, the Maguire one at Newcastle, I mean, they are... ones that if they go in, that's probably five more points, isn't it? It's beating Arsenal. It's probably beating Newcastle because that was at 0-0. But in terms of performance level, I mean, Solskjaer said, "Well, look, don't look at the results. Look at the performances." you might be preferring to look at results some of the time because the performances aren't up there. And yeah. This is doom and gloom, isn't it? But
yeah, welcome to my life for the last 6 months. Jesus
six
Christ.
Years, 6 years.
Oh, yeah, fair play. I was just trying to bracket a little bit. We had a bit of a spark for a minute. Back on the hairdryer thing slightly. I was talking to one of the academy players who just had Paddy Evra working with them.
Yeah.
And
I said,
what's he like working with? And because I can imagine he's fantastic. Like, I know there's a serious, real, heartfelt football side to him. And obviously there's the utter maniac that we see on Instagram that he chooses to put out as an utter maniac.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably 5% of his character. I think there's 90% of his character is a very serious football-driven man. And then there's a 5%, which I think is a bit of a maniac. And I said, does he ever flash? And they went about four times a day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, really? And he said, yeah, he goes... He's very positive, which you can guess. He's very encouraging. He's always talking to you. He's always demanding a little bit more. He said, and then someone will make a mistake and he just loses it.
Mm.
And he goes, but it's only to keep the standards high. Is he losing it? And I just thought, I wonder if there's something in a coach, an assistant coach, if not as a manager anyway.
Mm.
He did tell me that Fergie told him one day he'll manage United.
Mm.
And he was like, well, I'll do my coaching badges because if Fergie tells you to do something, you do it, right? And I'm like, well, I don't know, I've never spoke to him, so.
I think he said that to about 15 of them at various times.
He might have just said it to all of them. So yeah, when exactly. One of them comes off, they'd be like, he told me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's, people said that of Solskjaer when he was, I remember probably around mid-2000s.
So when he was the reserve manager?
No, before he retired, there were a group of players. Gary Neville was one, I think Nicky Butt was one. They were starting to take their B license or whatever, or the entry level coaching course, and people saying, "Oh, Solskjaer is really sharp, really perceptive," and you can tell he's sharp and perceptive and bright. But what you know, you need to see that they are getting brilliant coaching, and God, I think being a coach must be so hard. Because even if you just one-on-one coaching, that would just be a skill that was totally beyond me, even if I was some kind of Mourinho type attention to detail sort of self-taught football coach. I couldn't do that. But to be the best coach you can be, to be the kind of coach Manchester United need to be at this moment in time, you need to be sort of almost the pure technical coaching of Pep Guardiola plus the sort of iron fist of Alex Ferguson all rolled into one.
But and Fergie was never a technical coach. He hired
exactly. But is Mike Phelan a great coach? Michael Carrick?
We don't know. The jury's out on Carrick because we don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But Kieran McKenna was, prior to the 18, taking the 18th manager,
good things about Kieran McKenna.
Was like one of the brightest talents in coaching in the country. Proven, I think, by what he did with under-18s. Now, he had a talented group with Chong and Angel Gomez and that. But they not only did they win, but they, if any team played the United way that I've seen in the last decade, it was that under-18s team under Kieran McKenna. Mm. They didn't give a... We would win 5-1, 5-2, 5-3. Like, they just scored goals.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd concede. And you'd be like, I really rate these centre-halves.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking conceding 3 goals a game. But they were scoring 4 and they were scoring 5. And you go, well, there's clearly something in what Kieran McKenna's able to do because it hasn't quite been replicated. Mm. I know, obviously, players are coming and going all the time at that level. But I haven't seen that since.
Mm.
I think it was 2 seasons he did it with the under-18s team.
Mm.
And I hear good things about what Kieran McKenna's doing as a technical coach. And I hear that he's staying, he's having players stay behind and do one-on-one individual technical training with him. So that all is positive for me. But the overall equation at the moment doesn't seem to be working.
No.
I'm shitting it about Liverpool in the next week.
And I think...
Although we probably win.
You know, Liverpool have been through this for... I mean, look, Liverpool's last 30 years haven't been all.
How long?
29 years, not 30 years. But it's you know, the last 30 years, it hasn't just been one long trough. It's been, there've been spikes, you know, winning Champions League, winning other trophies. And look, I don't think there's, I mean, people say, "Oh, we're going to go into a Liverpool situation. We're not going to win the Premier League for 30 years." That's rubbish. It's impossible. Impossible.
For fuck's sake.
Honestly, it's impossible for United, being the size they are, not to win the Premier League. Not to win the Premier League in this next 20.
I think we get to 10.
Yeah. Well, it looks like definitely set their goals on getting to 10. It looks like they're going to make that quite comfortably, but. If you looked at Liverpool's, they had spikes, and they had real lows and spikes, and it was kind of up and down, and on average sort of fourth, fifth, and I think United wouldn't even have had to, what would it have been, like four more points last season, and they'd have finished third or something like that. United,
it was
even
in our grasp at times,
even having a terrible season, which they turned up for a third of it and were atrocious the rest of it. They nearly finished third, so I don't think the ceiling would be set that high to finish third or fourth this season.
No, the top two are miles away from everybody else. But I think I even said at the start of the season, even though I think we've got 9 out of an 11, I can see us finishing top four, because I could kind of see something happening at Tottenham.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't expect this.
No.
I don't think anybody expected this. No. I never trust Arsenal to be consistent and putting a run together. And I didn't know what the unknown quantity of Chelsea. They seem to have done quite well. But when you look at the midfield that Chelsea have got, you give that midfield to United, we turn around some of these results. The midfield's embarrassingly good. It might be the best in the league.
Yeah, it's very good midfield. And I like what Chelsea are doing. I like what Lampard's doing. And it's I think a lot of us in the media have been sort of crying out for somebody to do that with Chelsea, go with the younger players, because they have had the best youth set up in English football for the last 10 years, and you know, City.
Would they have done it without the transfer ban?
No, probably not. I don't think they'd have appointed Lampard without a transfer ban, and it is a good direction to go in if you're really clear on what you want to do, if you've got the right players, and if you've got you know, a real sense of, this is the way we're going. These are the players we're going to build around, and this is what we're going to do in the meantime. And we've got Azpilicueta and Kante and people like that who are good, mature. Well, but better than good. They're mature. They're leaders. They set the right example. And it's all very well saying the same with United, right? Okay, we'll go with the younger players. We'll go with the younger coach who's an ex-player. But I don't think they had anything like the same foundations to do that in terms of the senior players, in terms of the sort of proven quality and potential of the younger players. Like for example, somebody like Chong, I don't know how good Chong is meant to be or is expected to be. I don't know. I've really liked Daniel James's performances the first couple of months, but I don't know what his potential is. I don't know whether he would have the same sort of upside as someone like Hudson-Odoi at Chelsea. So, and you know, Tammy Abraham looks like guys who
fourth season as a professional, an open age professional.
Yeah,
you can't compare him to Mason Greenwood, who's
but you can compare to Rashford, who is younger than, and he looks a more accomplished leader of the line than Rashford in some ways. Rashford, I really like Rashford, but he's. I mean, maybe it is the chopping and changing of coaches that has done him few favours, and maybe it's kind of playing too many games on the left wing and so on, but he hasn't really kicked on in the way that you'd expect and hope he would, and Martial hasn't kicked on in the way that you'd expect, and I'd say none of the young players that United have signed over the last 6 years. Luke Shaw got United Player of the Year last season, just again, sort of by default, sticking to play.
He was never player of the year last year, but it's inexplicable.
But it's if you look at Chelsea, they do seem to be going. And look, it's early days under Lampard. If you look at Solskjaer at the equivalent stage last sort of February, March, things were absolutely rosy in the garden at that point. So you can't just say, right, well, Lampard's done a brilliant job and is the best, you know, is the man for the job for the next 10 years or whatever. But I do really like what he's doing. It's not only the messages he's sending out in the media and apparently behind closed doors too. It's the way that on the training pitch they look, on the pitch they look like you can tell what they've been doing in training, and that is generally...
Chelsea have had this weird characteristic of the average life cycle of a manager at Chelsea is about 10 months, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Over the last 15 years. But they always seem to manage to maintain a consistency. I don't know if it's the mentality and characteristics within the squad. They've always had a high level of players, which I always think helps hugely. Mm. You know, when you look at that dressing room, you've got Kante's, you've got some genuinely good players that are in there. I think that always helps you transition.
Mm.
I mean, Manchester City won titles under Mancini and Pellegrini prior to Pep coming in and spending four gazillion. Like, there was always going to transition into a new manager quite well. I think we all expected David Moyes to transition.
Yeah.
And I think the proof was in the pudding that that team shouldn't have come seventh. But then the team that Louis got, third, fourth was probably okay-ish. Yeah. And can he kick it on? And
What was it, fourth and all? Was it third?
Fourth and fifth on goal
fourth
difference.
Fourth and fifth on goal difference. So they finished level with City on goal difference, on points that season before Guardiola and Mourinho arrived, which... I'd say that, you know, the high points with United over the last 6 years, you know, finishing fourth and
getting groundsman of the year, that was a high point. I don't know, when's the parade for it, we know.
And
fucking laughing, it's on someone's mantelpiece somewhere.
The number of page impressions for the Alexis Sanchez signing announcement, that was a high point.
That sounds like the investor call.
Exactly. But the point about the high points, which were Van Gaal, that first season where they finished fourth, and you thought, well, they could kick on here. Winning the FA Cup, winning the Europa League and the League Cup under Mourinho, finishing second. And yet, at no point did it really feel like there was this sort of huge upward momentum,
did. We was going head-to-head with City for the league up until about Christmas. Maybe was that Liverpool game, 0-0? That might have been. That rings a bell, I think.
Wasn't it about 10 points difference?
Was it?
I'd say the first month of Jose. I would, because it got to about the October and it was, you know, the shackles were on, the handbrake was on, and you know, there'd been a couple of sort of stinker performances, the one at Watford that springs to mind, and then it went to Anfield. And it was just clear, you know, it was a 0-0, and it was clear by that stage that he just defaulted to sort of handbrake football. And
4-0 FC came after that, didn't it?
What's that?
4-0 FC came after that. We just fucking won 4-0 every week.
That was the second season?
I think it was Lukaku was there, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and Mkhitaryan. And,
that run was way down to Mkhitaryan, more than anybody wants to.
And then he was binned straight away, and, you know, The best football United have played in the last 6 years was with Mkhitaryan and Mata and Pogba and...
Lukaku
and one of Rashford and Martial. And then it was...
Yeah, because one to start, one to come on and score.
Yeah, yeah. It was roll on, roll off. But it was... But at that point, it was as if there was a way forward and a formula and a set sense of how United were going to play each week. And I know that if you look back at those games, it was like West Ham at home when they were about to, you know, they were in the final months of Bilic. It was
don't that, put reality over it, that, Ollie. That, I was enjoying it.
That, that run didn't look as impressive 2 months later as it felt at the time. Mm. But I guess, you know, the point was that even at the times where things have been on the up over the last 6 years, it's never really felt like there's been massive momentum and excitement.
The equivalent of Real Madrid, because they play in all white. I think you find they are.
You mean Moyes' first game?
No,
because that was
Swansea
probably
under Jose second.
Oh, Swansea, yeah. But it was Moyes' first game. It was 4-0, 4-1.
Oh yeah, I think Danny Welbeck's gonna be like, nothing's changing. 21, like, happy days, like, all day long. Fuck it.
And then cut to this 6 and a bit years later. So, can I say anything positive? Should we go back to the groundsman of the year?
Yeah, I mean, that was what an achievement that was.
Is there positives?
You don't feel like there's a lot at the moment. Fan base is absolutely tearing itself to shreds. If you don't tweet Glazer out 47 times a day, then you're clearly working for the board.
Well, it's a perfectly reasonable argument and position to have Glazer out, because, you know, it's been 14 years, and I can remember the time when United fans were really up in arms about, well, first of all, when they first arrived, they were up in arms about it, rightly so. Then there was the sort of acceptance, and then there was this sort of second wave, the green and gold campaign, etc. What was that, 2009, 10, thereabouts?
Mate, I had arguments with people who would tell me they'd been good owners because they spent money and we won stuff under them.
I've had arguments about that with United fans on Twitter, even in the last 12 months, where people say, oh, you can't blame the owners if the manager's this or if the players aren't doing it. And you think, right, okay, Man City have been strengthened to the tune of £1 billion, roughly, by their owners.
That's just this summer, right?
United have been weakened by £1 billion by their owners, for the privilege of being owned by them.
For all we've spent on transfers, and it's an eye-watering sum, and it is, and we do overpay, right? We do. We also supposedly make the most, so I don't give a shit what we spend on transfers.
No, absolutely not.
But we still haven't spent as much on transfers as we have on debt repayments.
Yeah, yeah.
Where would we have been if we hadn't?
Well, it depends if it's Ed Woodward picking the transfers.
Ed Woodward, Andy wrote this in his article. I was going to text him and say, where's that line come from? He said Ed Woodward was an exceptional commercial businessman. Is he, though?
It's a debate I've been having with people over the last few days, because there's this argument that he's out of his depth on football, but he's a commercial genius, etc.
Is he, though?
I think he did certain clever things in terms of commercial strategy when he first took that job. You could say some of that commercial boom was down to him, but the commercial income has begun to flatline the last few years. I don't think it's selling snow to Eskimos, selling the Man United brand to Asia or Africa or America or whatever. It's, if you look across European football, there are sort of seven or eight huge clubs whose commercial income has just gone stratospheric in the same way over the same period. Liverpool, Juventus, Bayern Munich,
everybody in the
Real Madrid, etc. Well, not all of them, because some of them, you know, end up with these sort of real low budget Gibraltar-based bookies on their sleeves and this kind of thing. You know, not everybody has made huge, been able to capitalise on Premier League. But United and Real Madrid are in a position to go like that commercially. And United did initially do that, and now they've kind of gone like that. And that is because what people are seeing is not as desirable as it was before. And it's not as desirable as what they see it, even as sort of chaotic Real Madrid or a
commercial innovation.
Yeah.
Why wasn't there an on-demand Netflix for all the historical Manchester United matches? Pay 59p a go to watch any game in history, wouldn't you?
Yeah, or if maybe
United couldn't have built that.
Or if MUTV have that on YouTube or whatever.
They only got YouTube about 2 years ago.
And Twitter and Facebook, 2013, I think. The last Premier League club to do that. Now, I know Woodward was one of the ones saying, look, we need to modernise, we need to do that. But they've... I think his commercial genius is massively overstated.
Big time.
But compared to his impact on the football side of things, I think it's...
relative.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think, you know, I've alluded to it at various points. I know a lot of this has been about Solskjaer, and about the players and so on, but I do think everything just comes back to being dragged down and by an ownership that had no plan for life after Ferguson, basically bought the club with the club's money, enjoyed the spoils of Ferguson-driven success and the players' success, made no serious money available in terms of rebuilding that team when, you know, Ferguson won those last couple of league titles with teams that were nothing like as good as Man City and Chelsea at that time in terms of individual players.
With players who'd been there a decade.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of... And it was a lot of the time it was those players dragging the younger players through and making them probably look better than they were. Mm. It was... That was almost... I mean, that was... You could argue that was Ferguson's biggest triumph, but they made no plans to really... The post-Ferguson thing was coming for such a long time, for as long as they were owners, 8 years, and they didn't have a real plan. You could even say, right, okay, appointing Moyes was... You could say that was fair enough because it was Ferguson's notion.
There was logic.
The idea was that it would be a sort of evolution that it would continue. And I think Ferguson himself underestimated how big a factor he was.
Well, he was probably five jobs, wasn't he?
Well, yeah.
He was the director of football. He was the manager.
And he was better than Moyes at every single one of those jobs. And that's not demeaning Moyes. It's just saying that he wasn't. Sort of fit to hold a candle to Ferguson.
The writing was on the wall 4 years into the Glazer reign.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we managed to get into a handful of Champions League finals. We lose Cristiano Ronaldo, the best player in the world at the time, and replace him with Aubameyang and Michael Owen.
Yeah.
And Tony Valencia, who actually did, you know, was relatively successful at us, but it wasn't Ronaldo.
And Tevez the same summer. Mm. And that ownership has... I mean, even once they've started... spending a bit of money. Well, spending quite a lot of money. They've spent a lot of money the last five years.
Fucking lottery winner.
But it's everything that United, not just United fans, but everything that Ferguson said and felt about early Abu Dhabi Man City.
Correct.
Everything that people inside the club said about, you know, just them being enthralled to agents and just being reactive and just going, oh, we'll have him. That's exactly what United ended up doing.
Yeah.
And they're still, you know, it's 6 years into that the Woodward era, let's call it the Woodward era. And this summer was a lot more sensible, a lot more restrained in terms of the type of deals they were trying to do. I mean, they still spent 130 million on Wan-Bissaka and Maguire. I think they're good signings, but they're not. They're not signings that make you think, wow, they've done brilliantly there. It's, you know, they're signings that anybody could
have paid the market price, yeah, didn't we? We walked in at the shop and went, how much is that?
Yeah.
And they went, 80 million. We went, give you 40. And they went, no.
A month later.
Give you 50. No. You 60. No. Yeah. We'll give you 80.
But that's,
okay.
But that's what people can do. That's what people can do with United now. You look, look at City, and even though they've paid big money for Rodri, they've paid big money for Laporte, big money for Mahrez, but they're not mugs. The clubs know that they will sometimes walk away from deals for a player they want. And
both them and Liverpool,
detriment.
When they buy someone, less so City, because you think they're just hoarding everybody in every position. They're so deep in every position, which is admirable. I am just jealous. When you look at what Liverpool, we all took the piss out of Klopp a couple of years ago. Fucking defence is dog shit. And he went Van Dijk, and we went, yeah, that's a pretty good signing.
Yeah.
And was like, that keeper's garbage. Yeah. And he did replace it. And you go, yeah, that's a pretty good signing.
Yeah. But, you know, if you look at United now, you'd say, well, look, they've got a real gap in midfield. They've got a gap on, well, probably got two gaps in a three-man forward line, if you want to put it that way. I don't know which positions you'd say are settled of the forward positions, but I'd say they need another two forwards.
Mm.
To go, I mean, in some ways, better to hold fire as Liverpool did with Van Dijk than to go and get somebody who you don't really want. But why so deep into this period? When did United last sign a right winger? Valencia?
Andre Kanchelskis?
But it
wasn't Valencia. No, Zaha? Was that how the last winger we signed? Maybe. I mean, Memphis.
There was Memphis and Martial were the same summer, weren't they? It's just bizarre. Everything's just like ridiculous. I really don't understand how they ended up spending as little net this summer as they did.
We slammed away Lukaku and all sorts, didn't we?
Because I hate it when clubs go for players they don't need, but United needed more in midfield.
Saying a Welbeck, an Andy Carroll, Llorente, all of those were available free transfers, most of them.
Can you imagine if they signed Andy Carroll?
Well, Andy Carroll came on at the weekend. They started lumping balls up to him. He started moving players around. Can argue it might have led to their goal. Because we was drawn into the deal with Andy Carroll.
He didn't want to sign Andy Carroll. He didn't want to sign Andy Carroll.
He'd have played.
Well, he probably would. Yeah. Probably be captain. But it's it just seems the idea that Solskjaer was I know he was nothing like as happy as he made out with the summer signings. I know he wanted more, but a lot of people were thinking, oh, United have had a really good transfer window there because they've got rid of some players they didn't want and they've managed to buy a few that they wanted.
Everything's nuanced though, isn't it? People want that black and white. Was it a good window, yes or no?
It wasn't.
Yes, because we progressed the squad in one hand, but
there were some good decisions. But United have needed a real clear out of all the dross, some of whom just get new contracts year after year, and a real influx of an injection of quality, young quality, high quality in various positions. I think Woodward said about 2016, we've reached a position now where we perhaps only need two or three out per season. We've gone through a lot of changes. They've never gone through a period where they've really got rid of all of the dross, no. The deadwood. There's still deadwood from the Ferguson era now. I mean, it wasn't deadwood under him because nothing looked like deadwood under Ferguson. Well, Alexander Butler.
Hang on, did it?
No, I'd say it was Fergie. Yeah, the only one that came into, the only ones that came into Moyes were Fellaini and Mata. He was.
When did we sign Butner? I
would say it was Fergie's last season.
I think I remember seeing him in that cover, Czech kit actually.
Cover for left back, but this needed to be a massive clear out, and this summer was sort of the beginnings of it. But when people said, "All right, well, he needs 3 or 4 transfer windows. He needs to get 5 or 6 players in." Well, they needed to get 5 or 6 players in this summer. I'm not somebody who normally would be screaming, "Oh, sign players," because I don't really believe in that. But I believe in it in Manchester United's case because there's so much that they need. So many positions where they are weak, not just long term, but short term. They're just weak in so many positions. They need real quality, and if they're not getting that real quality in, they need a manager and a coach who's brilliant at developing players and developing teams. And there's a question mark about that.
There was that little list sort of went round, wasn't there, just at the end of the window, which was there were 4 players he wanted and didn't get, which was Eriksen, Sancho, Maddison and Longstaff. It's probably a little bit ambitious to think you was getting them 4 plus Wan-Bissaka and Maguire. And also, I don't know how much that's costing you, but I think a lot.
Well, Eriksen...
Eriksen probably not, but the rest of them...
Eriksen could have been... I mean, I like Eriksen as a player, and I got stick for putting him in my Premier League team of the season last season, and people say, oh, no, he had a terrible season. I don't think he had a terrible season. I think he was not at his top level for some of it, and... But if Real Madrid were looking at Eriksen and Pogba, I would say we'll go for Eriksen. And if United were looking at signing Eriksen last summer, they should have done it. Mm. Not necessarily to replace Pogba, but just to add to what they've got, get a bit of guile, creativity, intelligence in the quality in the middle of the park, which I just don't think they've got. At all, and then
different prospect right now, wouldn't it? If we had those 4, I think we've lost a hell of a lot.
Just 2 of them. I mean, yeah, Sancho was a very difficult deal to do. I don't think Eriksen was a difficult deal to do this summer.
I think there was a lot of talk coming through people I know with Sancho and Yeah. Obviously, he's got quite close links to Manchester still. Yeah. And that Champions League talk was a load of bollocks. He was up for coming, and United didn't want to pay what Dortmund wanted, which I think was eye-watering.
Yeah, well, I can totally understand clubs not wanting to pay.
Yeah, what, I think that's fine.
You know, to say, all right, Olivia being quoted 130 million or something, to say, well, look, sorry, but no thanks. The idea of going for Longstaff and paying 50 million, that would have been ridiculous. I mean, he's decent prospect. Decent
that's it, midfield. 180 million on those two players.
That would have been... That would have been
got four or five.
Yeah, but if you look at the kind of deal that you know the one that United should be really kicking themselves for, Sadio Mane, because they wanted him when he was at Southampton. It was Van Gaal, wasn't it? And they went for Pedro that summer. Chelsea got him. They then went for Mane, but then didn't really go for him.
And did he go for like 22 million or something as well? Was it something ridiculous?
He was 30 or 35 by the time, but it was the next summer by the time he went to Liverpool. And it's that business of spotting.
But what's
potential.
He done since Ole? Eh? Nothing. Has he? No, exactly. He's not done anything, has he? Exactly. Nothing else.
No, Sadio Mane for. And then they ended up signing Martial, which was, look, he's a talented player. I know every time he scores, United fans will sing that song about, you know. About you know the press saying he had no chance, etc. I don't think Martial's been a great signing. He's been one of their better signings of the Woodward era. But
I don't think you can call him a success.
But he's been. But you know, he'd be one way you'd say jury's out. When or you'd have a mixed bag. Let's put it that way. Whereas if they'd gone for Sadio Mane, who was a Premier League proven player who was not necessarily one with didn't have the profile then that he had 12 months later when Liverpool signed him. Go for Van Dijk, go for Mane. Ideally, you'd go for them when they're at Celtic and when they're in Salzburg and stuff like that. You wouldn't be signing them from Southampton. But United,
signings from United?
They just don't exist. And when they do happen, they don't come off. But no. Almost none of United's signings come off.
Because I know United have got one of the biggest scouting networks outside of the football manager team. And it seems to me like, why are you bothering your ass scouting the Belgian league? Why are you bothering your ass scouting the Swiss league? Because you don't sign players from there. United will never sign someone for 400 grand from the Swiss league. Because I don't know if there's a risk attached to us going with someone of that profile that they just don't want to take. Because when you look at some of the players that have come into the league and where they've come from and the prices that they've come from prior to them getting linked with United, and you just go, I mean, Ben Yedder went for 30 million euros or something. Yeah. And you're honestly, that's not there's no risk there.
No. And you could say, well, you could question whether he was what United need, but there's so many players who have moved. Look at who City have signed. Look, Bernardo Silva. Bernardo Silva would have been perfect for United. I know that they had some interest.
I think I might have just seen him in the petrol station.
but Fabinho was another one that United were linked with for years. And that was an agent sort of driven one where they were he was being pushed towards them. And
Bruno Fernandes was pure agent driven.
That's the impression I got, despite there being so many people on Twitter changing their Twitter handles to, Bruno Fernandes MUFC or whatever, which is just okay.
We're just plain and simple weren't in for him. No, and maybe that was a mistake, but we weren't in for him.
There's just so many signings that every other club has, well, not every other club, but rival clubs have made. Where you think?
But look at the Leicester team. Oh God, that entire from Ndidi to Tielemans to Maddison.
Never mind, Kante and Mahrez were they were kind of diamonds in the rough type thing, but Tielemans was somebody that, he went to Monaco at the start of that season, and people were saying, why has no Premier League club been in for him? Was struggling there, went on loan to Leicester, did brilliantly, and he would improve.
But United's was he on the radar at six? Was he playing? He was playing European football at 16, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Why isn't he on people's radar?
Yeah. No, it's
madness.
It's strange, but there's so many that you think, well, Right, were we United on that deal? You know, even something like Aubameyang. I know they spoke to Aubameyang probably 2.5 years ago before Arsenal were in for him. And you think, well, this missing Manchester United goal scorer, could he have been that? Could he not have been somebody that they went for rather than Lukaku, who I think Lukaku was all right for that first season and
he was better than all right. He was
good.
Great.
Yeah, great. No, I'd say he was good that first season. You know what you're going to get from him. And if there was a feeling that he wasn't really suited to Manchester United style, well, why not go for Aubameyang? Or why not go for, you know, I'm sure I think Salah was on the market. What was that, 2017? Mm. They could have got him.
But I think everyone was like, well, that's not going to work, is it? Because he didn't even really light it up in Italy.
Well, his second season, or his last season at Roma, his scoring record was very good. I don't think
it
anybody
wasn't what it.
I don't know. I don't think anybody was expecting what's happened at Liverpool. But if you look at Liverpool, the players they signed, I mean, I'd say,
but that's also
not the case of Keita, but
Elevating their players because of the system that they're in. Because if you'd have looked at Robertson, I think he had 4 assists or something like that. And then you wouldn't be saying this guy's going to be in contention for best left back in the world God, 2 years later.
Absolutely not. And it's... But every player who goes to Liverpool into that system, into Klopp's system, and you know, it looks like... They always look like they've been brilliantly scouted over a period. The signings are... They're never... Oxlade-Chamberlain was, but they're never sort of end of the transfer window signings. They're never massively over the odds. I don't think, one or two maybe. But nearly all of their signings, they come off. Nearly all of City's signings come off. Nearly every signing that United make, you just think, oh God, wasn't he quite decent before he came here? And Maguire has been all right. Wan-Bissaka, I think, started well and he's got injured. James has started quite brightly. So there's this feeling, you wanted me to start finish on an upbeat note. So there is this feeling that these three signings have maybe been a bit more thought through than some of the agent-driven ones and some of the sort of top-of-the-head ones and some of the short-term Mourinho ones. But they need another 4 or 5 where that came from. But they also need... Solskjaer to be getting the best out of every single player and cracking the whip in a way that makes you think, God,
look how good tactically. Can we just not?
Yeah.
If we did that, I'd be happier.
But looking like that, they are all on an upward curve, and at the moment, you'd say the curve has been sort of that. and it's I don't think it. People say, "Oh, how bad can it get?" I don't think it can possibly get worse than this. I really don't. There's not a 1974 situation coming
fuck's
on.
Sake. But I think it could get a hell of a lot worse. But on the plus side, we might win a new trophy. Europa Conference Champions 2021. Is it starting 2021?
What a championship.
Someone said yesterday, didn't they? United get relegated, but qualify for the Champions League by winning Europa League, and the press won't know what to write about, and we'll take all the shine off Liverpool in the league. It's the perfect crime.
Well, it's expectation management, isn't it? That's...
bit of a right good season in the championship.
Oh, you love it. The United fans still of that era still reminisce about going to.
Oh, my dad's. It was the best time Bournemouth ever watching United
like that and trashing all these.
I was going to say allegedly, but it happened, didn't it?
Maybe not that much, but you know, I mean, Man City fans they reminisce about York and Lincoln away and Mansfield away. They all claim they're at York, don't they? I won't go there.
Fuck it, I'm doing it. So like, the 1998, they played Mansfield in the Otto Windshield Trophy. 3,007 attended. It had been under 3,000, but the Bayern Munich team was in attendance because United was playing Bayern Munich in the Champions League group stage the following day. Now, I've met personally probably 7,000 City fans who was at that game. It's incredible.
But there's a funny one with that. The Daily Mirror, the next day, had this headline which was something like... tonight Manchester United play Bayern Munich in a Champions League game in front of whatever it was, 60,000 people at Old Trafford. This is Main Road last night, and it was this picture of basically deserted Main Road and Mansfield in the auto windscreens. And It touched a nerve in that particular time, to the extent where at the next City home game, a few days later, because the old press box at the back of the old main stand at Main Road, a group of City fans sort of went marching up to the press box. So who's here from the Mirror? And this unsuspecting freelance sort of said, "Oh yes. Here I am." He had nothing to do with it, and basically he had to get stewards intervening to stop him getting attacked. And that was
the fucking truth.
But it was, that was a rare example of sort of shoot the messenger approach to journalists in the pre-Twitter era. It existed then, and
now you can just get tweeted, and that's you. Happy days.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Is that better or worse?
Well, I never got ambushed or anything like that.
I'd take enough chances on it.
Do you know what? I was going to say, I think things have. It feels like Twitter's been a calmer this season, but it does to me, honestly.
Don't look at the replies to any United player tweets. No.
Oh, yeah. But I think maybe it's reached the point where...
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had to deactivate his Twitter.
Did he? Right. He wasn't very active, was he?
Not really, but...
But he was. But the strange thing with United is that if you said anything... I mean, there have been various points at which pointing out United's weaknesses and pointing out Arsenal's weaknesses has been red rag to a bull, because a lot of people have been in denial about how things have been. And I think if you do it now, I think you get either a more subdued response or you get people just kind of, but you don't, I don't feel like there's as many people wading in on journalists this season. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not journalists.
With regards to United
fans. The players are getting it. Yeah. And the fans turning each
other to pieces. You know, I could totally understand frustration with some of those players, but sometimes you look at players tweeting and you see the abuse they get, you think, God, that's horrendous, because, you know, sometimes it's the players who least deserve it as well. And, you know, you see, I can totally, you know, I'm a football fan myself, and you totally understand the emotions running high, but just I think this business of just taking it out on people on social media, whether it's rival fans, journalists, your own players, it's not healthy. It's really not healthy. But by all means, tell me what you think in the comments below. Not on my personal Twitter.
I was going to give it then. I forget about it. Right, I'll throw a link to the article below that we were just talking about at the start of the show. And I'll also put the one about the ownership in there as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
Because why not? And like I said, if you would like to come and join on The Athletic, you can get 50% off the yearly subscription, and you can get a month's free trial by using the link down in the description below. Or just go to theathletic.co.uk/Housen. That is theathletic.co.uk/Housen. I was thinking a pop-up was going to come up in the middle of this then. No?
No.
Oh, there we go. There's the pop-up. So that's theathletic.co.uk/Housen, and it is the new home of football writing. Like I said, you can get hold of Ollie on there, you can get Laurie, you can get Andy Mitten on there as well. All very, very good articles about United, and there's a lot of stuff on there as well. I'm going to go properly check out the one about Wickham, because I think that's quite an interesting little yarn. But Ollie, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. And we'll see you in the next one. Make sure to subscribe, get your comments in for Ollie, and maybe we'll pull up a couple of them next time you're on.
Fantastic.
Laters.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.